Shop the Sherwin-Williams Super Sale and get 40% off paints and stains August 8th through the 14th. With prices starting at $29.39, it's the perfect time to transform your space with color. Whether you're looking to revamp your interior or exterior, we have you covered with bold hues, soothing neutrals, and everything in between. Visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store or shop the sale online. Delivery available on qualifying orders. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.
This is Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi. Here now, Tony Bruschi.
You ever fall into a rabbit hole online? And then after you've been in that rabbit hole for a while, you come out the other side wondering how humanity is still functioning? Yeah. That's why researching the incel movement and the community is quite the rabbit hole. And it's one you want to get out of because it just feels icky inside. What began as a lonely internet forum for the romantically unsuccessful, it does have fairly innocent beginnings. And is actually started by a woman. And it's devolved into something that has absolutely nothing to do to its original intent. It's devolved into something very sinister. A digital wasteland where bitterness curdles into misogyny and isolation fuels ideology. Welcome to the world of involuntary celibates, everyone, or incels. It's a subculture that's no longer just sad or strange, but it's dangerous. Very dangerous. And we're going to break down here in the next four episodes is what it's all about. Because we hear the term quite a bit, we talk about it quite a bit, because unfortunately, it seems a lot of the folks we end up following on this program that end up being killers seem to have tendencies of incels. So it's best to have an understanding of what it's all about. We're going to talk about Elliot Roger, maybe the Roger inspiration for the Papa Roger of Brian Koberger. And the online persona. We're going to talk about what he did, what others have done in his name, and how this bizarre, dark, self-destructive disorder, because it ain't a lifestyle. It's a disorder. Does, and how to spot it before it's too late in those around you. So press subscribe wherever you're downloading podcasts so you don't miss any of our four-part coverage on this. And also, let me know what you think in the comments section. So in this first episode of this series, we're going to be cracking open the festering underbelly of the incel world, its origins, its warped beliefs, its psychological roots, and why law enforcement is now calling it a domestic terror threat. If you thought this was just about guys not getting dates, well, buckle up. It is far, far more than just that. So, what is this? What is the incel movement? It's short for involuntary celibate, a term that once had a benign origin story. It was coined in the 1990s by a Canadian woman trying to create a supportive online space for people struggling with romantic rejection. Think of it as a early Reddit meets a therapy chat room. Vulnerable, awkward, human. But then the internet did what the internet does. It twisted vulnerability into venom. Over time, men, primarily young and heterosexual, dominated the space. The tone shifted from support to self-pity, from loneliness to loathing. What was once a shared pain point became a manifesto of entitlement and rage. Today's incel community largely resides in digital echo chambers, forums that exist out there. I'm not going to name them here, but they're out there. Certain threads on message board obscure corners of Reddit before they were shut down, where users reinforce the belief that women are to blame for their misery. They believe the dating world is a rigid game where shallow women chase genetically superior men and the rest are left to rot. The modern incel doesn't seek connection or change, however. He wants validation for his resentment. Yeah, nothing like looking in yourself and saying, maybe it's me. Maybe there's something I'm doing that's making me not attractive to the opposite sex. Could it possibly be that? Nah, it's them. It's a very infantile way of thinking. So, the incel worldview, it operates like a dark fantasy novel, complete with its own terminology. You ready for this? The term Chad, a conventionally attractive, confident guy who seemingly has unlimited access to sex and affection. This is from the incel's perspective of what they think they're seeing out there. Then there's the Stacy, the blonde bombshell archetype, who incels see as shallow, manipulative, and sexually available only to Chads. The incel, meanwhile, casts himself as the tragic anti-hero, kind, intelligent, and invisible. They speak of normies with disdain, viewing average people who engage in successful romantic relationships as deluded sheep. And then comes the black pill, the philosophical backbone of inceldom. Unlike the red pill, popularized by men's rights activists or activists as a supposed awakening to society's feminist lies, as they say, the black pill is nihilistic. It's the belief that nothing can ever improve. That no matter how much self-work you do, your fate is sealed by your jawline or your height. It's predestination in a basement is basically what it is. Taking the black pill means giving up on self-improvement. It's a descent into fatalism. It says you're doomed and your women and women are your worst enemy. You know, a real healthy outlook on life. The incel identity could have remained a sad corner of the internet, but over the last decade, it's evolved into something far more disturbing. As those platforms like Reddit and YouTube crack down on overt hate speech, incel communities became more insular, more radical. These aren't just forums for venting anymore. They're breeding grounds for resentment, contempt, and in some cases, violence. The shift towards extremism came in waves. Initially, the language was passive. Passive-aggressive, you could say. Women were hyper-glamorous or gamorous, always dating up. Irrational, or only attracted to status. But slowly, the darker tone took over. Posts began glorifying violence against women or women, praising mass shooters like Elliot Rodger, who we'll get into in just a little bit, and fantasized about a dystopian world where sex is rationed and women are punished for choosing partners. The language became militarized, basically, calling for an incel rebellion. References to a beta uprising, a culture of martyrdom emerged, where men who committed acts of violence were hailed as heroes. Elliot Rodger wasn't just a killer, he was canonized. This wasn't frustration anymore, it was ideology. And that's dangerous. When you take some sort of anger or hate or view of a slight, as a lot of it would start, and you never look at yourself. You never look at, well, how can I live a better life? How can I make things work out better for me? But that black pill culture is what they live on. There is no self-improvement. It's everyone else is wrong, and I'm right. And that's it. Eventually, You would think people would snap out of that and maybe want to improve, or others choose to destroy. And that's where you get the Elliot Rodger or the Brian Koberger. It's easy to characterize incels as greasy teenagers shouting into the void, but the psychology is a lot more complicated and deeply troubling. According to mental health studies, many incels struggle with severe depression, anxiety, and feelings of social rejection. One study found that nearly 20% of incels experience daily suicidal ideation. That's not a red flag. That's a five-alarm fire. Neurodivergent traits are also overrepresented. A significant number of incel forum users exhibit signs of autism spectrum disorder, social communication difficulties, and anxiety disorders. This doesn't excuse the ideology, but it does explain why many members struggle to form social bonds and experience isolation and gravitate towards more rigid belief systems. The most important psychological factor, though, is what researchers call aggrieved entitlement. It's the belief that these men are owed love, affection, and sex, owed it. And that the denial of these things is not just unfortunate, but unjust. It's not just self-pity, it's perceived injustice, and perceived injustice is a powerful motivator, especially when it finds community and reinforcement. Incels believe women hold all the sexual and romantic power in modern society. That power, in their eyes, is not earned, but stolen. So instead of viewing women as equals or even as individuals, they become villains in a rigid, rigid system. This cognitive distortion, combined with a lack of healthy social interaction, it creates a feedback loop of resentment, basically. So how does someone go from a sad sack with a blog to a domestic terror threat? The product of radicalization within incel forums is disturbingly predictable. It starts with isolation, maybe from trauma, bullying, or mental illness, or a combination of it all. The person seeks connection online and finds others who feel the same. And instead of being challenged, their beliefs are validated. Instead of being guided to help, they're given ideology. And once inside the bubble, every bad date, every job rejection, every slight becomes evidence of a conspiracy against them. The posts they read glorify men like Elliot Rodger and Alec Minnison. These aren't cautionary tales. They're role models to them. Every time another man commits a violent act and leaves behind an incel-flavored manifesto, the forums light up like it's the 4th of July. Memes are made. Acronyms like ER, Elliot Rodger, are thrown around as slang. The internet makes a martyr of a murderer. The rhetoric escalates. Members go from passively consuming hate to producing it. They write fantasy stories about killing women. They plan hypothetical attacks. They fantasize about legislation that would force women to have sex with them. Because that's how it works. Legislation, guys. Go for that. It's not just unhinged. It's a breeding ground for real-world threats. Authorities were slow to act on the threat of incel violence because for a while, who took internet nerds seriously, right? But then the bodies started piling up. After Elliot Rodger murdered six people in Isla Vista in 2014, Alec Minnison drove a van through a crowd in Toronto, killing 10. Scott Borelli walked into a yoga studio and opened fire. Chris Harper Mercer shot up his community college. All of them referenced incel ideology, either explicitly or through online activity. Eventually, law enforcement began to see a pattern. In 2020, Texas law enforcement issued a bulletin warning that incel ideology has the potential to eclipse other domestic threats. The U.S. Secret Service National Threat Assessment Center followed suit, identifying misogynistic extremism as a growing source of mass violence. Now, behavioral threat assessment is part of a playbook. Officers are trained to look for signs, obsessive messaging, idolization of violent figures, disturbing online activity. But the challenge remains. There's no clear profile. You can't predict who will snap. Some quietly plot. Others explore, and then they explode suddenly. The internet provides both the fuel and the anonymity to help them do it. It's not just about creepy forums. It's about real women who get harassed, stalked, and in some cases, killed. Like Kaylee Gonzalez, Madison Mogan, and Zana Kernodle. And the man, the Chad, is Brian Koberger likely saw him. Ethan Chapin. Collateral damage. With rage. Now these folks normalize this hate. Under the guise of free expression. It's about the boys in high school reading these forums instead of talking to a counselor. It's about the social shrug we give to male loneliness until it turns violent. Incels don't exist in a vacuum. They're the product of a culture that shames males' vulnerability, but rewards dominance. They emerge from childhoods where emotions were either ignored or punished. And when they hit puberty and encounter rejection, there's no toolkit for how to cope. And they turn to rage and Reddit. Fixing this isn't just about deplatforming or calling people out. It's about addressing the underlying issues that incubate incel ideology. If you want it to change, you got to look at what is causing this. And that means serious investment in mental health for young men. It means reshaping how we talk about masculinity, not as dominance or stoicism, but as resilience, empathy, and connection. It means creating real-world alternatives to online radicalization, mentorships, peer support, actual inclusive sex education. It also means not looking away. The more we pretend this is just a fringe internet noise, the more we allow it to grow. The incel community thrives on neglect. They believe no one understands them and society doesn't care. So, let's try and understand the threat they pose. And by cutting off the pipeline that feeds it. So yeah, this isn't just about guys who can't get dates. It's about ideology, mental illness, misogyny, and violence all stirred together into a toxic stew and served cold on anonymous message boards. Now that we've peeled the lid back, we get a better idea of what's inside. In our next episode, we're going to walk through the case that made the world take notice. Elliot Rodger. Who he was, what he believed, and how his self-made mythology launched an entire movement. And it's horrifying. There's your spoiler alert, everyone. If the incel world has a martyr, a messiah, and a mascot all wrapped up into one narcissistic package, its name is Elliot Rodger, the 22-year-old virgin with a BMW and a GoPro. Didn't just murder 6 people and injure 14 more at Isla Vista Park back in 2014. He authored his own mythology. He set the template for an entire violent ideology. And he filmed a farewell video so drenched in misogyny and self-pity. Might as well have been titled The Incel Manifesto, Live and Unhinged. This is a story of how one privileged young man transformed his personal rejection into a cult legacy of murder, hatred, and internet infamy. This isn't just another mass shooting. This is where the incel movement found its twisted prophet. Let's dig in. On May 23rd of 2014, it's a sunny Friday night in Isla Vista, California, a college town pulsing with the end-of-week buzz. Students are out, grabbing dinner, heading to parties, getting a drink. Meanwhile, Elliot Rodger is inside his black BMW. Meticulously following a plan he's written about, fantasized about, and filmed himself describing. He calls it his day of retribution. Before the city even knew what hit it, Roger launched into a calculated killing spree that mixed stabbings, shootings, and vehicular assault. First, he killed his three roommates, Chen Yang Hong, George Chen, and Weihan Wong, by stabbing them to death in the apartment that they shared, cold, up close, and personal. Then he drove to the Alpha Pi sorority house, intending to massacre the women inside. The door was locked. He knocked. No answer. Foiled but undetermined, he shot three women standing nearby, killing Veronica Weiss and Kathleen Cooper, and wounding Bianca DeCock. He continued his rampage through Isla Vista, shooting passerbys, pedestrians, and a male student in a deli named Christopher Michaels Martinez. He used his BMW as a weapon, too, deliberately striking pedestrians and cyclists. All in all, six were murdered, 14 were injured. The whole thing lasted less than 10 minutes. Roger exchanged gunfire with police, chased his vehicle, and was later found dead of a self-inflicted gunshot wound. The entire rampage was premeditated, rehearsed, and grotesquely documented by Roger himself in a series of chilling videos and a 137-page manifesto emailed to friends, family, and his therapist. Roger didn't just want to kill. He wanted to explain it, glorify it, frame it. His manifesto entitled My Twisted World reads like a blend of a college admissions essay, Reddit rant, and Bond villain monologue. It's 137 pages of relentless self-justification where he paints himself as a victim of cosmic injustice, not just misunderstood, but wronged by every woman who ignored him, every man who succeeded where he failed. In the document, Roger lays out a painfully detailed autobiography from childhood loneliness to teenage awkwardness to adult age. He recounts a life in which women never desired him, men never respected him, and happiness was always just out of reach. But rather than reflect on his own behavior or lack of social skills, he blames everyone else, particularly women. Roger writes, quote, "All I ever wanted was to love women, and in turn, to be loved by them back." He continues, "Their behavior towards me has only earned my hatred. I am the true victim in all this. I am the good guy." It's not narcissistic or anything. That's not a confession. That's his declaration of war, basically. He explains that if he cannot have sex, love, or admiration, then no one should. His solution? A mass murder designed to punish those he believed were living the life he was denied. Hours before the murders, Roger uploaded a YouTube video titled Elliot Rogers Retribution. It's now one of the most chilling pre-attack videos on record. He's sitting in his car, dressed in designer sunglasses and sneering into the lens. Roger monologues for nearly 7 minutes. He smiles as he describes how women have starved him of sex and fantasizes about punishing them. With the delivery of a wannabe movie villain, he vows to enter the hottest sorority house and slaughter every single spoiled, stuck-up blonde slut inside. That's his words. His language is unfiltered, his tone smug. He calls himself the supreme gentleman, a phrase that would soon become shorthand on incel forums for those who believe they are owed sex because they're nice guys. Note to those nice guys that feel this way, you're not a nice guy. That's not being a nice guy. That's just not being a nice guy. No, that's not it. That is not it. In the years since the video, he has shared, dissected, and in incel circles been idolized. It's not a farewell message. It's a recruitment pitch. After the attack, Elliot Rodger became a legend, like I said, in incel communities. Not condemned, canonized. They call him ER, Saint Elliot, or the Supreme Gentleman. His initials became code. His image became meme material. His manifesto circulated like scripture. On forums out there and old 4chan threads, members praised Rodger as someone who had the guts to take revenge. They joke about going ER in shorthand of obviously for committing similar attacks. They remix his video into montages. His name becomes both dog whistle and rallying cry. He's not just remembered, he's revered. What makes this especially dangerous is how Rogers' worldview maps directly into incel ideology. The entitlement, the rage, the belief that sex is not just a want, but a right. And that women who deny it are committing a moral offense. He screeds on race. He frequently raged at interracial couples. Status and beauty echo every dark fantasy that incel forums cultivate. He gave the movement a figurehead and a playbook. Elliot Rodger didn't hide his pain. He broadcast it. He posted dozens of YouTube videos in the years leading up to the murders as well. Monologues filled with resentment, despair, and barely veiled threats. He wrote blogs. He left comments on forums attacking women and praising serial killers. His family was alarmed. At one point, they contacted law enforcement, worried about the disturbing videos he was posting. Officers visited his apartment. They talked to him, but he was calm, polite, and articulate. No weapons in plain sight, no immediate threat, so they left. Just weeks later, he launched his attack. Rodger had also been in therapy since childhood, diagnosed with a pervasive developmental disorder linked on the autism spectrum. He struggled with social connection from an early age on, but somewhere along the line, that struggle morphed into self-pity and rage, helped along by years of online radicalization. He frequented a forum, a now defunct one, that's a board where users united in their hatred of women and mockery of pickup artists. It was toxic, even by 4chan standards. His manifesto drips with contradiction, self-loathing, and grandiosity. He calls himself inferior and superior in the same breath. He despises women for rejecting him, but elevates them as goddesses who hold the keys to his happiness. It's narcissism, weaponized by rejection. Nobody stopped him. Because what do you do when people act like that? And talk like that. What can you do? The police were called. I think by the time Elliot was at this stage, he was too far gone. This is where identifying this way of thinking in young men at an earlier stage and getting ahead of it would be helpful. In the days following the Isla Vista massacre, a hashtag swept across Twitter, hashtag yes, all women. It was a response to the inevitable not all men defense that popped up in the wake of Rogers' misogynistic motives. Women around the world shared their own experiences of harassment, fear, and everyday sexism, stories that reflected the same entitlement and hostility that fueled Rogers' rage. The attack forced a national conversation about gendered violence, toxic masculinity, and the internet's role in fostering hate. It also prompted law enforcement to reconsider how seriously they should take online threats. Rodger wasn't a random lone wolf. He was the product of a system that ignored countless warning signs and a culture that too often treats male rage as a phase instead of a threat. Rodger didn't create inceldom, but he defined it. His manifesto video, his murder spree, turned a loose collection of online malcontents into a self-aware hate movement. After Rodger, the incel ideology became more coherent and more dangerous. Future killers cited him. Forums used his initials, his shorthand, and every time an incel-linked attack occurs, Elliot Rodger's name resurfaces as inspiration. His legacy is a cautionary tale, not just about violence, but about vindication. He was a lonely young man who surrounded himself with digital voices that said, "You're right. You're the victim. They deserve it." The echo chamber turned suicidal ideation into mass murder. Roger's story forces us to ask a lot of tough questions. How many other young men are sitting in front of a screen right now, reading his words, watching his video, and seeing not a tragedy, but a template? The guy who called himself the supreme gentleman. History will remember him for what he truly was, a murderer who cloaked his misogyny in a manifesto and wanted the world to see his pain as righteousness. And unfortunately, a small, angry corner of the internet did exactly that. If Elliot Roger was the spark, then what followed was the wildfire. His rampage in Isla Vista wasn't just a grotesque act of violence. It was a blueprint. In the decades since his 2014 massacre, a disturbing pattern has emerged. Angry, isolated men, radicalized by rejection, empowered by misogyny, and fueled by a digital community, now worships violence. From college campuses to public sidewalks, from Canada to the UK, these so-called incel attacks don't just emulate Roger's rage. They took up his torch. And the death toll keeps climbing. In this episode, we're going to examine the most notorious incel-inspired killers and attacks since Roger's so-called Day of Retribution. Some succeeded by wreaking horror. Others were stopped before they could pull the trigger. But every single one of them carries the same calling card. Misogyny turned militant and loneliness weaponized. Let me know in the comment section what you think on YouTube. If you're not on YouTube, search Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi. You can find us there and comment. And be sure to press subscribe wherever you're listening to this or watching this so you don't miss anything in this series and all of the cases that we cover for you right here. So, on October 1st of 2015, students at UMPQA. How do you say that one? Umpqua? I'm going to go with that. Community College in Oregon. Someone's like screaming it at me right now, I know. It's an interesting one. Umpqua. Umpqua Community College. There we go. In Roseburg, Oregon. We're going to refer to it as Community College going forward. They were sitting in class when the 26-year-old Christopher Harper Mercer opened fire. He killed 9 people and wounded 8 before turning the gun on himself. It wasn't just another school shooting. Harper Mercer, like Roger before him, left behind writings steeped in bitterness, resentment, and admiration for violence. He idolized Roger. In a chilling note, he wrote, "Elliot Roger is a god." He expressed outrage at his own sexual inexperience and described being mocked for being a virgin. When someone teased him about it before the shooting, he snapped back that his virginity was involuntary. That one word, involuntary, anchors him squarely in the ideology of incels. Investigators later discovered Harper Mercer had been active on forums aligned with incel culture. He saw Roger not as a monster, but as a misunderstood avenger. His writings referenced incel lingo and mirrored Roger's grievances, particularly around romantic rejection and perceived social exclusion. Harper Mercer's attack marked a grim milestone, the first high-profile incel-inspired mass shooting on American soil after Roger. It was a horrifying reminder that Roger's ideology had in fact survived, and it found new followers. Fast forward to April 23rd of 2018 in Toronto, Canada, lunchtime. 25-year-old man named Alec Minison rented a white van, got behind the wheel, and deliberately drove it into a crowded sidewalk. He killed 10 people, 8 of them women, and injured 16 more. Minutes before the attack, Minnison posted on Facebook, quote, "The incel rebellion has already begun," and quote, "All hail the supreme gentleman, Elliot Roger," unquote. If Roger laid the groundwork, Minnison issued the call to arms. After his arrest, Minnison confessed his motive in chilling detail. He said he was a virgin, felt oppressed by women, longed to spark what he called a beta uprising, and used incel jargon, Chads and Stacy's, black pill, retribution. His goal wasn't just revenge, it was recruitment. He wanted to inspire others to follow him. In court, his defense team argued mental illness, noting Minnison's autism diagnosis, but the judge wasn't swayed. In 2021, he was convicted of 10 counts of first-degree murder. While his mental health may have shaped his worldview, it didn't excuse the clear, calculated nature of the attack or his alleged allegiance to Roger's ideology. Minnison's case highlighted an evolution in incel-related violence. This was no longer just gun violence. This was vehicular terrorism, a method deliberately chosen for its low barrier of entry and devastating impact. His weapon was a rental van, not a firearm, and his message was global. On November 2nd of 2018, 40-year-old Scott Paul Burrell walked into a yoga studio in Tallahassee, Florida, and opened fire. He murdered two women and wounded five more before killing himself. His name may not be as well known as Roger or Minnison, but his motives were chillingly similar. Burrell had a long documented history of misogyny. He posted YouTube videos railing against women, calling them sluts and whores, and praised Roger's reasoning, if not explicitly, his actions. In one video, he lamented never having a girlfriend, but ranted about women ignoring men like him. Gee, I wonder why. He'd also been fired from jobs and banned from public spaces for groping women and harassing female coworkers. And the most disturbing evidence, a 70,000-word diary, a novel he kept, filled with revenge fantasies. He fantasized about murdering women, punishing them for rejecting him, and restoring some twisted version of gender justice. Before the shooting, he left behind a note that read, "If I can't find one decent female to live with, I will find many indecent females to die with." According to the U.S. Secret Service's National Threat Assessment Center, Burrell's attack became a key study in misogynistic extremism. His profile, they said, fit a growing pattern of men radicalized not just by hate, but by entitlement. In July of 2021, federal prosecutors in Ohio charged 21-year-old Trace Genco with plotting a mass shooting aimed at women. His plan? A full-blown incel revolt, as he worded it. He'd scoured locations, bought tactical gear, stockpiled weapons, and written a manifesto. One chilling detail? He referred to his target list as sorority women. Genco was obsessed with Elliot Roger. He titled one of his documents, "Isolated," a not-so-subtle homage to Roger's lonely worldview. He idolized the Isla Vista killings and hoped to go even further. Fortunately, the FBI intercepted his plan before he could act. In 2022, Genco pled guilty to planning a hate crime. His case became one of the first federal prosecutions to explicitly classify an incel attack as hate-motivated terrorism. It showed that law enforcement was finally connecting the dots, recognizing that incel ideology wasn't just dangerous rhetoric, it was a direct threat. Until August of 2021, mass shootings were exceedingly rare in the UK. Then came Jake Davidson, a 22-year-old from Plymouth. Davidson killed five people, including his own mother and a three-year-old girl, before taking his own life. Davidson had been active on incel and black pill forums. He posted YouTube videos lamenting his virginity, expressing hopelessness about women, and embracing incel identity. He talked about being doomed by genetics and resented those who he saw as more attractive and successful. Though his victims weren't all women, his motives were soaked in incel grievance. His rage was directed not only at those he knew, but a society he believed had rejected him. The UK government subsequently opened an investigation into how Davison had legal access to firearms despite a history of disturbing behavior. Again, it wasn't just a tragedy. It was a signal flare. It proved that incel violence had crossed oceans, borders, and legal systems. Misogynistic extremism, once dismissed as a fringe American phenomena, had gone global. The cases here are just the most visible. Since 2014, at least a dozen more incidents bear incel fingerprints, and those are just the ones that have been looked at in that light. You can only imagine the true number. In 2020, a 17-year-old in Toronto walked into a massage parlor and stabbed a woman to death. Canadian prosecutors labeled it the first incel-related attack to be prosecuted as terrorism. That same year in Arizona, Armando Hernandez Jr. opened fire at a shopping center targeting couples. He later told police he was an incel and was angry at seeing people in relationships. He wounded three people. Other plots have been stopped before violence occurred. One man in California tried to build a bomb to kill, quote, hot cheerleaders. Another in Texas wrote manifestos online calling for a war against women. Even when their plans didn't manifest into bloodshed, their intent was clear and terrifying. What unites nearly all these men is a pattern of behavior, disturbing online posts, histories of harassment, self-identification with misogynistic ideologies, and open admiration for previous attackers. In many cases, friends, family, or coworkers noticed. Sometimes they reported it. Sometimes they didn't. This is something that should be taken just as seriously as if you caught somebody building pipe bombs in their basement with a manifesto about how they're going to take out a group of people because of their race or religion. This is the exact same thing, except it's for their sex. And when you see the people like this, and we catch the people like this, we need to remove the people like this from society. Because I tell you what, they ain't going to change. There's no fixing some people. This is their ideology. They're not coming back from it. And we shouldn't let them back into society because of it. Even when authorities were alerted, systems failed. Just like Roger, many of these men flew under the radar, even though they were directly on it. We just didn't have, and still don't have, the tools or the plans of how to deal with them. Because they weren't criminals yet. They hadn't broken the law, but they had clearly broken from reality. That's why the U.S. Secret Service, the FBI, and Canadian counterterrorism units now include incel behavior in their threat assessment models. In responding to the growing threat, law enforcement agencies have ramped up training on behavioral threat assessment. Agencies now look for patterns, social media posts idolizing mass shooters, misogynistic language, manifestos, stockpiling weapons, and histories of rejection and rage. It's great we can identify it, but we need to do something about it when we find it. Now, don't we? Some mental health experts are advocating for earlier interventions, especially for teenage boys showing signs of radicalization. But they face a dilemma. How do you treat someone who doesn't see themselves as sick, but rather a righteous angry? Online platforms have taken action too. Reddit banned R incels in 2017. Facebook and YouTube cracked down on hate speech. But many incels migrate to darker corners, like, I'm not going to name them. I'm just not. It's a digital whack-a-mole. Every time one form is shut down, another emerges. There are also a growing push for public education, especially around healthy masculinity, consent, and rejection. Experts argue that teaching boys emotional intelligence, hey, what an idea that would be! Empathy and resilience could act as cultural vaccine against the incel window. Because once someone takes the black pill, taking them down becomes exponentially harder. Since 2014, incel-related violence has killed dozens and traumatized communities across North America and beyond. Each attacker had their own story, but the themes are disturbingly consistent: loneliness, entitlement, misogyny, and the belief that violence is justice. What started with Elliot Rodgers' Day of Retribution has grown into a global subculture that celebrates hate and mourns rejection with blood. But unlike traditional terrorism, there's no mastermind, no single ideology, just a network of angry men egging each other on until one of them finally snaps. Our job as journalists, as investigators, as humans, is to pay attention, to spot the signs, to build the systems that intervene before the next name becomes another hashtag, another shooter, another saint in the Incel Hall of Fame. Because there's nothing supreme about killing for entitlement, and there's nothing noble about hate. When news broke of the brutal quadruple homicide in Moscow, Idaho, in November of 2022, the country collectively recoiled in horror. Four bright, young University of Idaho students, Madison Mogan, Kaylee Gonzalez, Zana Kernodle, and Ethan Chapin, were slaughtered in their sleep in what appeared to be a cold, calculated attack. For weeks, there was no suspect, no weapon, no known motive, just blood, grief. A lot of questions. Then came Brian Koberger, a criminology PhD student arrested in Pennsylvania and charged with the murders. His background stunned people. A man studying criminal minds had become the prime suspect in one of the most savage murders in recent American memory. And the details trickled out. A disturbing theory started to emerge. Was Brian Koberger driven by the same misogynistic resentment that's defined incel-motivated killers like Elliot Rodger and Alec Minnison? We don't know for sure, but what we do know suggests it as a very real, chilling possibility. The murders took place in the early morning hours of November 13th, 2022. The victims, Madison, Kaylee, and Zana, shared a house just off campus. Zana's boyfriend, Ethan, had stayed over that night. All four were found stabbed to death in their bedrooms. There was no sign of sexual assault, no theft, just extreme close-up violence. Police found a K-bar knife sheath at the scene, later matched via DNA to Brian Koberger. Cell phone data placed him near the house a dozen times before the murders, usually late at night. The implication? He was stalking them. Even before Koberger's arrest, behavioral analysis and true crime observers speculated that the attack could be rooted in incel ideology. We've talked about it here on this show. Former FBI agent Jennifer Coffendeffer commented that the brutality and target profile, young, attractive women, suggested an offender with a deep rage towards women right here on this show. They're known as incels, she said. The theory wasn't pulled from thin air. The incel community has a track record, isolated men fixated on beautiful women. They believe they can't have, and increasingly get angry about it. When Koberger was identified as a suspect, those suspicions intensified. And once you start looking into his life, it's hard not to see the incel-shaped puzzle pieces falling into place. According to a People magazine report, Koberger had messaged one of the female victims, reportedly Madison Mogan, on Instagram weeks before the murders. That's the allegation. She never responded, allegedly. The allegation goes on that he messaged her again, and still nothing. To most women, this is just routine digital noise, a guy sending harmless, if unwelcome, messages. But to someone like Koberger, who reportedly had a long history of rejection and humiliation from women, it may have felt like a trigger, a reminder that no matter how smart he was, how much weight he'd lost, or how much he tried to change, he was still the invisible creep he's always been. Rather than look inside and maybe figure out, hey, maybe it's me. Maybe I should act a little different. I should learn to act a little different. He became the victim. Incel forums are filled with this kind of narrative. I messaged her. She ignored me. She deserves what she gets. It's the seed of a warped worldview where rejection equals injustice, and injustice demands payback. Former classmates described Koberger as awkward, intense, and angry. In middle school, he had a crush on a popular girl, allegedly, who firmly rejected him. He was reportedly overweight, bullied, and socially ostracized. Eventually, he lost over 100 pounds, supposedly in an effort to attract women. But according to peers, it did not help his personality. In fact, some said it made him more aggressive. Female classmates recalled that he didn't take no well. One woman said Koberger would repeatedly message or follow women even after they made it clear they weren't interested. This persistent, entitled behavior is textbook incel. Rejection wasn't just disappointing. It was a personal affront. By college, Koberger had developed a heroin addiction and posted online about feeling like a sack of meat with no self-worth. That particular phrasing, objectifying, self-loathing, desensitized, matches the kind of language found on incel boards, where users talk about themselves as soulless bodies cursed by bad genetics. Meanwhile, at Washington State University, where Koberger was a PhD student and teaching assistant, as a teaching assistant, I'm saying this in the wrong tense several times over. Let me try that again. At Washington State University, where Koberger was a PhD student and teaching assistant. There we go. Several female classmates complained about his behavior. He reportedly made women uncomfortable in class, often dismissing their contributions or acting condescending. One student said Koberger followed her to her car late at night. Another described him as arrogant and socially unaware. He was eventually fired from his teaching assistant position due to behavior issues and reports of inappropriate conduct like that. And then there's the infamous Tinder date that we've heard about. A woman who met Koberger in 2015 described him as creepy, noting that he kept trying to touch her despite her discomfort. After the date, he messaged her to say she had good birthing hips. Let that one sit for a moment. Birthing hips. On a first date. Usually save that to like the second or third, don't you guys? Or never? That's not just socially awkward. That's a sign of someone who views women in terms of their reproductive utility. And very much in that sort of thought process. Reproductive utility. Not nice ass. Something like that. Reproductive utility. That's incel language. The kind found on forums where women are reduced to wombs with Wi-Fi. One of the most bizarre but intriguing angles of this case involves an online user named Papa Roger. This person was active in a Facebook group discussing the Idaho murders and made oddly specific, sometimes eerily accurate comments, like predicting that police had found a knife sheath at the scene before it was even known. After Koberger's arrest, some users began to suspect he may have been behind the alias because the picture also looked just like him. It's never been confirmed yet, but here's the kicker. The name Roger could be a reference to Elliot Roger, the mass killer, incel, often referred to as Saint Elliot in those circles. If Koberger chose that name intentionally, it suggests more than awareness of incel culture. It implies identification. So let's line it up. Elliot Roger, Alec Minnison, Scott Borelli, all incels, all socially isolated, all fixated on women, all left behind manifestos or digital trails revealing a worldview of entitlement, rage, dehumanization of women. Now look at Koberger. He was isolated, rejected, obsessed with crime, seemingly unable to form lasting relationships with women. He followed his victim's house multiple times before the murders, sent ignored messages, and allegedly stalked. One victim, Ethan Chapin, was male. But he was also the boyfriend of Zena Kernodle, possibly collateral, possibly seen as a Chad. Is it definitive? No, but it's hauntingly familiar. Now, let's be careful. Koberger has not confessed to being an incel. He has obviously confessed to the crimes, but we don't know if he's an incel, at least not from his words yet. No manifesto has surfaced. He hasn't been charged with a hate crime, meaning it would be linked to being an incel. These were first-degree murder charges. It's important to separate strong theories from proven facts. But even without a smoking gun, the circumstantial evidence, his background, behavior, language, victim selection, makes the incel motive theory more than a stretch. It's plausible and extremely likely. And that extreme likeliness should make us think. What did the incel theory, or why did the incel theory catch fire so quickly? Well, partially because it made sense to some, but also because it tapped into something bigger, the modern fear of unprovoked misogynistic violence. The Idaho case didn't just terrify people because of its brutality, it terrified people because it felt targeted, premeditated, engendered. And for many people, and especially women, echoed a lifetime of being watched, followed, messaged, dismissed, and harassed. These people were out there, and now they had community. The threat was familiar. The escalation was what made it news. Journalist Nancy Jo Sales wrote that an incel might look at the social media pages of girls like Kaylee or Madison and see a world he believes he'll never access. Smiles, parties, boyfriends, the beautiful blonde sorority girl archetype becomes a symbol of everything he feels denied. In this case, or if this case does have incel undertones, it adds urgency to the conversation around misogynistic extremism. We've seen the pattern too many times. Men who feel rejected, who marinate in online toxicity and then decide to punish the world for not loving them. What can be done? Early education on healthy masculinity, real conversations about rejection, entitlement, and empathy, better mental health outreach for socially isolated men, and platforms that take misogynistic radicalization as seriously as they take political extremism. Law enforcement is starting to catch on. Behavioral threat assessments now often include misogynistic ideology as a factor, but there's a lot more to be done, especially in understanding how quickly loneliness can curdle into hate, especially today. Whether or not Brian Koberger turns out to be an incel in the traditional sense, his story fits disturbingly well into the pattern. If it looks like an incel, acts like an incel, and allegedly kills like one, he's an incel. The conversation is worth having. And the incel crisis isn't just about sex. It's about entitlement. It's about loneliness weaponized. And in its most violent form becomes terror. Quiet, calculated, and devastating. The challenge isn't just to stop the next attack. It's to intervene before the next Koberger, the next Roger, the next Minison ever decides violence is an answer to rejection. Because the first step towards prevention isn't reaction, it's recognition. Let me know what your thoughts are in the comments section on YouTube. If you're not there already, just search Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi and you will find us right there. Be sure to press subscribe on every platform or any platform you're listening to us on as well, so you don't miss any of our coverage on this case and the many cases we cover for you right here at the Hidden Killers Podcast and True Crime Today. I'm Tony Bruschi. We'll talk again real soon.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers Podcast.